just insane. And it also implies that God is, therefore, if God is only on our side, that God is somehow against other people, right? And wants Iranians to die and wants our enemies to die. And again, Jesus's message is blessed are the peacemakers, not blessed are the warmongers. And again, his message after the resurrection is peace be with you, not I'm going to take revenge. But, you know, what Paula White was saying was idolatry. And that's against the first commandment, period.
And Defense Secretary Hegseth recently leading a prayer at the Pentagon asking God to pour down overwhelming violence of action against those who deserve no mercy. Can you talk about how the Pope responded when he said, even though you make many prayers, I will not listen. Your hands are full of blood. Pope Leo said that.
Yeah, God is a God of life. This idea that some people don't deserve mercy is completely against the Christian message. So on pretty much every measure, it fails as a Christian message. Calling down violence against somebody, saying that someone doesn't deserve mercy, saying that God is only on our side. I mean, it's a real perversion of the Gospels.
I want to thank you, Father James Martin, Jesuit priest, editor-at-large of America Magazine, author of the new book, Work in Progress. That does it for our show. I'll be speaking today after the 1:30 screening of Steal the Story, Please! At the IFC in the Village. We'll be doing the Q&A with the co-director, Carl Diehl. I'll also be speaking tonight at the Q&A after the screening of the film at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. Tomorrow we head to Los Angeles, where we'll be at the different Lemley Theaters, and then to San Francisco this weekend to be at the Roxy in San Francisco, at the Rialto in San Rafael, and in Berkeley. You can go to democracynow.org to see all the details. This is the first week of Steal the Story, Please! The film screening around the country. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Earth Day is around the corner. Celebrate with KBOO at our Earth Day tree planting open house, April 22nd, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mingle with other Earth-conscious radio heads, enjoy snacks and drinks, and become a part of KBOO's roots. That's April 22nd, 11 a.m. at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, for KBOO's Earth Day Tree Planting Open House.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the Northwest Hub Bike Shop, presenting a benefit concert headlined by Rick Estrin and the Nightcats at the historic Grand Theater in Salem on April 19th. Tickets and information at salemshg.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, workers at Amazon's Troutdale Distribution Center were told to keep working after their co-worker collapsed. Vancouver City Council votes to reject an interstate bridge replacement project plan to shorten light rail. And colleges court previous stop-out students to return to their studies. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, April 14, 2026. I'm Eric Leuschner. A worker at the Amazon Distribution Center in Troutdale died on the job last week, and workers were told to keep working, according to new reporting from Oregon journalist Ryan Haas. When the 46-year-old man collapsed on the floor near where workers were unloading Amazon trucks, a co-worker started chest compressions and another employee called 911. Management did not stop operations for more than an hour, as news spread around the facility and paramedics eventually arrived. Amazon distribution centers push their workers to do their jobs at breakneck pace, and injuries are not uncommon. A 2019 investigation by the nonprofit investigative radio show Reveal found Troutdale had the worst injury rate of 23 major distribution centers based on OSHA data. Workers told Haas and his web publication, The Western Edge, that the man who died was a tote runner tasked with hauling stacks of plastic bins up and down the long corridors of the warehouse. They describe it as a very physically demanding job, and one that got harder recently when Amazon cut down on the number of tote runners they employed, forcing others to work longer and harder. One anonymous worker at the Troutdale facility told The Western Edge, quote, "It makes me feel more ashamed to work there knowing that people can drop dead, and we have to carry on knowing it doesn't matter to the higher-ups, and everyone is replaceable," end quote. Amazon said in a statement that Oregon OSHA found the death was not work-related. Vancouver City Council unanimously voted to oppose a part of the Interstate Bridge reconstruction that would cut short promised light rail into the city, OPB reports. The Interstate Bridge replacement project has ballooned in cost, largely because of inflation in the cost of building materials. In an effort to cut costs, the latest plan is to end light rail service at the Vancouver waterfront instead of connecting a half mile up the road into town. The light rail would end at the end of the bridge, 90 feet above the waterfront. Councillor Eric Paulson was among those voting against it, saying, quote, "It is effectively hovering over the waterfront of downtown Vancouver. That is not an effective place to connect three Vine lines and all of our other transit lines. So no, that does not work for the city of Vancouver," end quote. Washington Governor Bob Ferguson says there will be a phased approach to the construction, and it will start with the core pieces of the project. That means the north and southbound spans of the bridge, the basic light rail expansion, and the freeway cap in Vancouver are the main tenets of the project that are already funded. Interstate bridge replacement planners say they still plan to extend light rail into Vancouver, but the timeline is just pushed back. The risk of flooding across Washington state is increasing with the changing climate, and researchers are discovering how nature-based solutions that center the needs of the community can provide better protection. The data shows that environmental strategies like building wetlands cost less and are more effective than constructing hard infrastructure like seawalls. Isabel Charlet has more.
Researchers in Washington are working to find nature-based and community-centered solutions to prevent flooding and improve livability in flood-prone areas across the state. After the South Park neighborhood in Seattle experienced an unprecedented flood in 2022 along the Duwamish River, scientists joined forces with a local nonprofit to explore flood adaptation strategies through the Living with Water Project. BJ Cummings, researcher with the University of Washington, says this is a chance to try out cutting-edge nature-based solutions to flooding that also benefit the community.
As devastating as that experience was, it's a really terrific opportunity to do a demonstration of what this could look like and then actually measure the health benefits, the economic benefits, the environmental benefits that we get out of that project.
The Washington Department of Ecology says climate change is increasing the risk of flooding across the state, and floods cost the state more than any other natural disaster. Researchers found strategies like restoring floodplains and building wetlands could be more cost-effective and were preferred by the community compared to hard infrastructure like seawalls. Cummings says the research is built on a review of the scientific literature and community interviews about their values and priorities, and she believes centering local leadership is the best way to ensure solutions are effective. It's practical, she notes, because it's easier to get funding from local governments with community backing. She adds that solutions might also cause unintended harm. For example, she says in this case, some people may choose to move to avoid floods.
But if you simply move people out of the floodplain without them leading what that looks like, you might break that community cohesion that is one of the key strengths of this community.
I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
In higher education terms, stopouts are students who temporarily leave college before finishing their degree, but who plan to return later. The group is clearly growing in number and includes about 38 million working-age adults in the U.S. In some ways, they have the worst of all the worlds. They have student loans to pay back, but no degree to boost their pay. While many really intend to return to college, few ultimately do. Now colleges and local governments are trying to get them back on track. The number of stopouts re-enrolling has been on the rise, reaching more than 1 million in the 2023-24 school year, a 7% increase from the year before. There are many reasons underlying why students leave college. It's expensive, and many older Americans have competing caregiving needs or even health issues. States are trying harder to provide financial assistance or remove bureaucratic hurdles like account holds. And universities may offer scholarship programs for people close to finishing their degrees. As one example, Maryland colleges re-enrolled 25,000 students in 2023, an increase of almost 10% from the year before. But that's a tiny number compared with the 600,000 working-age adults who had dropped out of Maryland schools without completing their degrees. Many colleges use data to identify people with a high number of credits, emphasizing specific supports that can help them finish their degrees. Stopouts can be hard to track down and re-engage. A company that helps schools with this outreach found it takes an average of 24 touchpoints, such as texts, emails, and meetings, before a stopout re-enrolls. Still, that's much easier than recruiting students from scratch. One Democrat and one Republican resigned from Congress following allegations of sexual abuse. The war in Iran is raising food and fertilizer prices. And West Virginia is the latest state to push back against DOJ demands for voter data. With those stories and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Bring in all the victims. Allow them to be heard. Allow them to be questioned. That will clear his name if he's indeed innocent. And if he's not, for the sake of the credibility of the court, I hope that the senators would vote against him.
In 2018, Democratic Congressman Eric Swalwell offered support to the women accusing then Supreme Court Justice nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexual assault. Swalwell says he'll resign from Congress after similar allegations from multiple female staffers, and he's ended his campaign for governor of California. Texas Republican Tony Gonzalez says he'll also leave the House after an alleged affair with a former staffer who later committed suicide. Two Republicans and one Democrat from Florida could also lose their seats due to allegations of dating violence, campaign funding violations, and financial misconduct. President Donald Trump says the U.S. is now also blocking the Strait of Hormuz, while Tehran is sending a warning directly to American consumers that they may soon feel nostalgic about $5 gas. Oil prices rose after weekend peace negotiations between the U.S. and Iran failed to strike a deal. The White House aims to exert greater economic pressure on Iran, but American farmers warn food prices may spike due to a fertilizer shortage. Natural gas provides a key raw material for it, and a third of the world's fertilizer normally passes through the strait. Catherine Alexander is with the Greater Boston Food Bank.
Hunger exists everywhere, and we're really not seeing anybody who's escaping this difficulty.
Following widespread backlash, Trump has deleted an AI-generated image portraying him as Jesus healing a sick patient. The Truth Social post followed Trump's criticism of Pope Leo and his opposition to the war in Iran. The Department of Justice is suing to force West Virginia state officials to turn over voter data, similar to suits in half of the states to gain access to the names, addresses, and social security numbers on voter rolls. The DOJ says it wants to ensure election integrity by cleaning the rolls and excluding non-citizens. But Julie Archer with West Virginia Citizen Action Group says she's concerned the overreach could deny the ballot to people with every right to vote.
They are requesting an unredacted version of the file, and really they have no valid basis for asking for that data and trying to seize it.
West Virginia's Republican Secretary of State is refusing to turn over the information, citing voter privacy. And voters in Festus, Missouri have ousted all four members of their city council after they approved a $6 billion data center deal. Public backlash against data centers has grown nationwide over concerns of rising energy prices and other environmental impacts. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A bill in the California legislature would allow the state to sue oil companies for climate losses. Today, the California State Senate Judiciary Committee will hear a bill designed to stabilize the fund that provides homeowners insurance to people who can't buy it on the open market. The bill would authorize the state attorney general to sue oil and gas companies over climate-related natural disasters. Suzanne Potter reports from Sacramento.
Today, lawmakers in Sacramento will hear a bill to hold oil and gas companies liable for climate-related disasters. Senate Bill 982 would authorize the Attorney General to sue to recover damages after a natural disaster linked to climate change, like floods or wildfire. A new climate disaster fund could stabilize the state's FAIR plan, which is the insurer of last resort in areas that have been abandoned by commercial insurance carriers. Marisa Aguayo lost her San Diego area home in a flood in 2024. She says her $250,000 insurance policy was insufficient, and then the company canceled her policy altogether.
It was complete devastation. The insurance process felt like being re-victimized. And it feels like we're living in a state of overwhelm every single day.
The Western State Petroleum Association calls the Affordable Insurance and Recovery Act a $32 billion climate tax that could raise the cost of energy production and lead to higher prices for gas and utilities. Supporters say something has to be done to save the FAIR plan, which has tripled in size since 2021 and currently insures nearly $700 billion worth of property. Louise Belli from Santa Ana says homeowners insurance has shot up since the LA fires, even for people far from the burn scar.
The oil companies can help solve this problem. There is going to be more climate-related disasters in the future. Someone's going to have to pay for it, and I think they should be held accountable.
Studies have linked the burning of fossil fuels to climate change and have tied climate change to the rising frequency of extreme weather events. Belli says average homeowners shouldn't have to bear the cost of climate change.
The attorney general would ensure that the oil and gas companies contribute to a climate disaster fund. It could be used for community resiliency efforts and for future climate-related disasters.
The AIR Act is co-sponsored by three nonprofit advocacy groups: Extreme Weather Survivors, California Environmental Voters, and the Center for Climate Integrity. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6 o'clock, it's This Way Out. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be rainy with an overnight low of 44 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy as well with a high of 49. Today in history, in 1775, the Society for the Relief of Free Negroes Unlawfully Held in Bondage, the first abolition society in North America, is organized in Philadelphia by Benjamin Franklin and Benjamin Rush. The quote of the day is from American satirist James Branch Cabell, who said, quote, "Literature is a vast bazaar where customers come to purchase everything except mirrors." The Alaska Federation of Natives is the latest group to speak out against the SAVE Act, currently stalled in Congress. They say it would create significant barriers for Alaska Native voters to exercise their rights. With that story and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas. The Alaska Federation of Natives is speaking out against the proposed federal voting bill it says could create new barriers for Alaska Native voters. In a press release issued April 6th, AFN urged Congress to reject the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility, or SAVE Act, which is currently being debated in the U.S. Senate. AFN represents more than 190 tribes, along with Native corporations and nonprofits across Alaska. Leaders say the bill would require voters to present documentary proof of citizenship, such as a passport or birth certificate, in person at a designated election office in order to register for federal elections. For many Alaska Native communities, that could mean traveling long distances, often by plane, at significant cost. In a statement, AFN says, quote, "The SAFE Act would disenfranchise eligible voters and recreate the very barriers our communities have fought for decades to dismantle," end quote. The organization also raised concerns about how the bill would treat tribal identification, noting that many IDs do not include citizenship status and would require voters to obtain additional documentation. AFN says the process could take weeks and may be difficult or impossible for some community members. The group argues the legislation is unnecessary, calling it, quote, "a solution in search of a problem," end quote. AFN says the bill would also restrict systems widely used in Alaska, including mail-in and online registration. As the debate continues in Washington, tribal leaders are calling on Congress to focus instead on improving access to voting, particularly in rural communities. A federal judge has rejected a plea agreement in the case of missing Navajo elder Elda Mae Begay. Begay, a 62-year-old member of the Navajo Nation, was last seen in 2021 at her home in Sweetwater, Arizona, and has not been found. According to the Associated Press, the judge denied a proposed deal with Preston Henry Tolth, who was accused of assaulting Begay before she disappeared. Prosecutors say the agreement would have allowed Tolth to avoid additional prison time. Begay's family opposed the deal in court. Her niece, Seraphine Warren, told the judge, quote, "Accountability is not time served. We still don't have the truth," end quote. Advocates say the case highlights ongoing challenges in addressing missing and murdered Indigenous people across the country. Arizona drivers have lots of specialty license plates to choose from, 114 to be exact. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrasio reports, the largest tribe in the Phoenix metro area is among the latest to be featured.
Back in 2023, Republican Representative Teresa Martinez pitched letting the Gila River Indian community design its own plate.
Lots of people will think, oh, this is just another license plate bill. It is a very big deal.
Because for each plate sold, $17 will be donated to the tribe's transportation committee for traffic and road improvements. Commuters regularly travel through their reservation just south of Phoenix.
Especially when the I-10 is down.
Martinez's proposal passed part of a larger bill that included the neighboring Akchin Indian community and Pasquayaki tribe. Gila River in March became the fifth of Arizona's 22 federally recognized tribes to print one. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrasio.
And I'm Jill Freitas.
According to the latest FBI data, Washington residents lost nearly $460 million to fraud last year, and experts say AI is helping scammers reach more people more quickly. As Isabel Charlet reports, April is Fraud Prevention Month, and AARP has some helpful tips so that people of any age can avoid becoming victims.
April is Fraud Prevention Month, and new data shows fraud continues to be a big concern for people of all ages, with nearly 4 in 10 people saying they've already experienced it. The data from AARP also shows growing confusion and overconfidence around artificial intelligence-driven scams. Kay Tomlinson with AARP Washington says scams largely haven't changed how they operate, but they have been supercharged by AI.
AI makes fraudsters more believable and more efficient. Now, one person with the help of AI can implement multiple scams on multiple people all at one time, pretty much with the click of a button.
Tomlinson calls the financial impact on residents breathtaking. The latest data from the FBI shows that Washington residents lost nearly $460 million last year to fraud. AARP Washington is hosting a number of fraud prevention events this month, and people can find more information online. Tomlinson says she is is disappointed that Washington failed to pass a law regulating crypto kiosks this year, another popular tool for scammers. She adds whether it's investment, romance, or grandparent scams, fraudsters are counting on people's inexperience. She advises people to be more skeptical when it comes to the communication they receive.
You need to listen to that voice in the back of your head saying, Kay said to not believe everything I see and hear, especially on social media, but also text, email, phone calls.
Tomlinson says identity theft is the most common type of fraud, and one of the most powerful tools people have to prevent it is freezing their credit so that scammers can't make big purchases in their name. She explains this can be done for free, does not affect credit scores, and people can unfreeze their credit as needed to make large purchases. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
Portland music store Music Millennium canceled a listening party at the last minute after social media backlash about the artist using artificial intelligence to make their album. Willamette Week reports that Brandon Carmody's CD release party for the album AI was supposed to happen at Music Millennium on Monday. He says he wrote partial lyrics and melodies and had generative AI put together the rest. Commenters online wrote that they were disappointed, and some said they found the record store's endorsement hypocritical. Some staffers also went to the owner, Terry Currier, to say they didn't support hosting an AI artist with all AI vocals. Ultimately, Currier decided to cancel the event. He said, quote, "This is all a little too much. I'm not looking to incite any trouble," end quote. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. He says Donald Trump is outdoing previous presidents when it comes to war making, starting with refusing to call the Iran war a war. Gertov observes Trump has abused the Constitution, Congress, allies, and domestic and international law. His recklessness is doing him in. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. Donald Trump has made waging war more centered than ever before on presidential prerogative. The same president who once fulminated against his predecessor's penchant for going to war has turned into an imperial leader who can't get enough of it. He has not merely built on past violations of law and the Constitution to make war. He has expanded presidential authority in exceptionally dangerous ways, taking advantage not only of Republican majorities in Congress, but also of the Supreme Court's decision that grants the president broad immunity on his actions. Let's be clear, every president since World War II has tried to stretch his authority to act abroad. Whether we're talking about Truman in Korea, Kennedy and Johnson in Vietnam, Nixon in Cambodia, George W. Bush in Iraq, or now Donald Trump in Iran, all abused presidential power. But here are six areas in which Trump has gone beyond previous presidents. In ignoring the Constitution, sidestepping Congress and allies on prior consultation, controlling information, defying laws governing the use of force, making war a religious venture, and failing to communicate U.S. aims. First, the Constitution's grant of war-making authority may mean little if a president decides that the use of U.S. power abroad isn't a war. Trump has done exactly that. In Trump's lexicon, war does not exist, only military operations, a bit of trickery perhaps learned from Vladimir Putin's military action against Ukraine. The role of Congress in war-making used to mean advanced consultation by the president with the relevant committees, adherence to restrictions imposed by Congress, such as the War Powers Act, on deploying U.S. forces in combat, and bargaining over budgetary limitations that Congress might legislate. Trump has cleared away all these potential obstacles. He and his top advisors have consulted with very few members of Congress after the fact and offering precious little information. The War Powers Act has had no perceptible impact on the regime's war plans, least of all in an undeclared war. Every attempt by Democrats to bring Trump's war on Iran to a halt by resolution has failed. Congress, controlled by the Republicans, has left the field to Trump to do whatever he wants, regardless of the expense, even when some of them have expressed misgivings about his war strategy, or lack of it, and obscene threats. Far from using the power of the purse, moreover, the congressional majority is weighing the regime's request for huge increases in the president's war budget, a $200 billion increase, and in its next budget cycle to $1.5 trillion. The failure to consult also applies to U.S. allies. Trump has upbraided NATO for refusing to support his war, which is true. But the blame rests on him for not consulting the organization before going to war. If he had, he would have gotten sound advice and a suitable rebuff. Then there's the regime's approach to information. It has persistently refused to state the war's aims, accept intelligence findings contrary to its beliefs, and suppress information about its intentions. Every assumption on which Trump has acted, such as that Iran is close to having a nuclear weapon, that it is an imminent threat to U.S. interests, that the Iranian people will rise up against their leaders, and so on, all of these have proven faulty. Yet the Trump regime has refused to reevaluate its war policies. Instead, Trump and Pete Hegseth have directly attacked journalists and news organizations that publish unfavorable war news. The use of force also has some new components. One is reliance on Israel to conduct airstrikes that target supposedly dual-use military-civilian entities, such as rail lines, bridges, and industrial plants. A case can be made that such targeting violates international law on protection of civilians. Moreover, the U.S. has been generous in supplying weapons to Israel that are being used in the Iran war in violation of U.S. law. And, of course, there are Trump's threats to bomb Iran back to the Stone Age and eradicate a whole civilization, clearly war crimes as defined in the Convention on Genocide. Next, whereas previous presidents have expressed the belief that God is on our side when the U.S. uses force abroad, under Trump that belief has become a fixture, not merely a prayer. Finally, we have Trump's failure to explain why war is necessary, what it will accomplish in the national interest, and how long U.S. involvement will take. Previous presidents have spoken regularly to justify military action abroad, but now the public, the press, and Congress get no consistent or meaningful rationale for putting soldiers in harm's way and causing a global energy crisis. Trump has simply plunged ahead. Thus does his administration find itself engaged in a war that is widely unpopular, unsupported by European allies, and extremely costly for the U.S. and the global economy. Previous presidents were defeated by engaging in unlawful and unpopular wars. Trump may well be impeached and removed from office in addition to suffering defeat. But all his troubles stem from his own recklessness. I'm Mel Gertoff for the Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, April 14, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertov and Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is